rolling. How y'all doing? It's your boy Silver. I'm back again for this very exclusive Silver review. I'm over here getting tongue-tied. I'm super geeked up for this, man. I can't even lie to y'all. But I'm on live today to have a one-time exclusive conversation with the Emmy-nominated journalist, Miss Megan Rivers. She is literally an inspiration to a lot of people, but for sure to me, because I like to talk to a lot of people, and she's definitely a professional at talking to a lot of people. So I'm about to pick her brain. I'm about to have a very, very high, intense conversation because I'm very happy for this moment right now. If you don't know, today's message is you are elite. So we gonna get this thing cracking, and y'all always remember that you are elite.
Hello there.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hi. How are you doing, Miss Megan?
I am well. How are you?
I can't complain. You know, it's Tuesday. I'm alive and well.
You know?
Yes. Yes.
Half battle, right?
I know that's right. If everyone don't know, I just gotta be like on my journalist hat, because of course you are the ultimate journalist that I really look up to. Gotta do my little journalist thing. This is Megan Rivers right here. She is an Emmy nominated journalist. She resided out in Manning, if I'm not mistaken, but she's from Michigan, so I don't want to mistake that.
Yeah.
But if everyone's trying to figure out the, like, how this happened, I'm like, well, I was at the Cooper River Bridge run a couple years ago, and I ended up just seeing her the day before the run. It's like, oh my goodness, it's a news reporter. Talked to her, and then she ended up being real cool. So I really do appreciate this opportunity. Just got to say that front and center.
No problem.
Yeah. Now, I got to ask you for real, because you were still in Charleston doing your news reporting out there. Shout out to the A43. And then you ended up going out to D.C. How did that transition happen? And how was your emotions for that move?
So I ended up in D.C. because last August I went to a conference called NABJ, which is the National Association of Black Journalists. And I wasn't looking for a job at all, actually. And when I went there, I actually met some people who work at this station that I'm at now. And it just, one thing led to another. And when I got back to Charleston, one of the managers from the station emailed me and let me know that there was a position open. And she asked me if, she told me that if I applied, to let her know. And boom, 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 here I am. It's been a little over a year now since I have been in D.C.
Okay.
And what a year it has been.
I was about to say, like, for the year that you would be, like, your rookie year in D.C., like, you came into the game with, like, hellfire and brimstone behind you. Like, but that's, like, a real good opportunity, I would say, in the journalist's head to say, yo, this is a city to cover a whole lot. And if not the nation capital, out of all places, like, you know, that's really big. Like, so congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you so much. The year did not go as planned at all, because I was here for 3 months and then the pandemic happened. And, you know, this area has never really reopened. And so it's just not the same. I came home and I called Charleston home because I was in Charleston. I came home, I think it was in either April or May, and y'all were like wide open.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is different. I'm still wearing my mask. And she would call me right now. You know, these people, let me answer this phone. I'm going to answer it
yes,
on live.
This is live. Go ahead.
Sorry about that. So
no, you're fine. Story.
Work never stops. I try to make it stop, but it doesn't stop. Okay.
It's all good.
So yeah, so like I got here and we are still like in phase two of reopening. And so we're not open. The area that I live in has limited indoor dining. The areas closest to me still don't have indoor dining at restaurants. Gyms don't have indoor fitness classes.
Wow.
I mean, it is pretty much a ghost town. And then to add, you know, on top of that, you had the insurrection that took place a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's been snowing since Sunday.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, don't. Like, let's catch a break, you know?
Welcome to D.C.
Like, when people, I remember when the inauguration was coming up, folks were asking, like, you know, or telling me that they were, you know, they wanted to come to the inauguration. And I was like, for what? Like, please stay out of D.C. There is nothing going on. It is not popping here. It is not. Man. I have experienced more of D.C. not living here than I have living here.
Wow. Chocolate City, out of all places, people would think, you know, it'll be all glitz and glamour. And I agree with you. It's like, wow, what a year DC has been. What a year the whole world has been through. But I always like to say it on the bright side. I mean, 2020, if we didn't get through 2020, we really don't know how to get through anything that's like traumatic in our life. If we can get through that, we can get through anything, I feel like. So I just think about that for a minute. But the life of a journalist, I had to ask you, because what got you into it? I know you love to talk. Was that something that you was like getting in trouble for as a kid? Because that was definitely something I did. Like as a kid, I always got in trouble for talking. So that was when I knew I liked to talk. What was for you?
Yeah, I definitely got in trouble a lot for talking. That was my number one note sent home or call into parents. I remember one time I circumvented a call. I knew that she was going to call. I was holding that phone for dear life, because that teacher was going to call and she was going to want to speak to my mother. And I needed to go ahead and pretend to be my mother. And so I've always been able to mature my voice ever since I was a child. And okay. So I pretended to be my mom. And she thought, you had got me. And I went to school the next day like, yeah, sis, you ain't it. But honestly, one of the journalists who inspired me the most is a Low Country native by Darcy Strickland, the name of Darcy Strickland. Okay. She's a main anchor at WLTX News 19 in Columbia, South Carolina. And I watched her a lot growing up, and she is one of my idols. She's a really good friend and mentor to me, and she's one of the many people, she's the first person who inspired me, and one of the many people who still inspire me to want to be a good journalist today and to try to be the best journalist that I can be every day going forward.
Awesome. That's so dope. I really feel like people don't know that kind of impact that they have on someone, and they're just looking from them from afar. So I can definitely attest to that, and that's a dope answer. So, you know, I'm gonna be honest with you, Miss Megan. I'm the name of this show is like, I really talk about anything that comes to my mind, and I love talking about politics. I love talking about sports. I love talking about music though, mainly as well. And like I sent through you earlier, I just wanted to know, just because I just like to know what people's taste of music is. So what are your top three MCs that you like live and die by? Like you can say they're the greatest in your opinion.
Okay. I am a diehard D'Angelo fan. Like,
you like D'Angelo?
Diehard.
Okay.
Like, he does it for me, you know? It's the D'Angelo for me, honey. It's the music, it's the lyrics, it's everything about him. It's fat D'Angelo, skinny D'Angelo, strung out D'Angelo, whatever version of him he gives us. Even when his last album, when he came out with a different sound, I mean, it wasn't what I wanted, but I still rocked with it, you know?
Okay.
After
that, we got D'Angelo.
Yeah, D'Angelo. D'Angelo's top artist for me. Brian McKnight is a close second. The reason being is I love pianos. I love it. I think he plays well. He sings well. I think he comes from a family of musicians. And so I just love, I love him. And I think his live performances are better than any studio recorded album he's ever done. And especially when he sings with his sons, I mean, he does it for me. number three, it's tough. Like, I feel like I should choose a woman, or I should say a woman, because I'm a woman, and I think one of everybody's favorites is Whitney Houston. But she's like, you know, undeniably great, right?
For sure.
But honestly, if I had to go with a number three, it's kind of tied between the Commodores and Stevie Wonder.
I mean, Miss Megan, you were literally in my album collection right behind me. You got Stevie and the Commodores. They're so crazy. I need some Whitney in there now. You just remind me about that. But the Commodores, they go hard. Oh, yeah.
So, okay. Like, Whitney, I love her because she has taken so many songs and made them her own. Like, some of her biggest songs was like a Dolly Parton song originally.
Yep.
And
one
of her other biggest songs was a Chaka Khan song. And I was in here last night on FaceTime with one of my childhood friends. And so I love the song I'm Every Woman, right? And I like Whitney's rendition of it. But it's the beginning for me.
Okay.
I can't sing, so I'm not even going to imitate it. But then y'all go on YouTube and search I'm Every Woman and listen to the beginning. It's really mellow before she gets into the song. And it's just so beautiful. And I tend to fall in love with parts of songs, sometimes more so than the actual entire song. And so, I love me some Whitney too.
I love that. You know, yeah. So funny with your answers, I can kind of go off with like a tree branch answer and just be like, I just got this painting the other day of Jerome as my favorite character to Martin, one of the best shows of all time. And I just thought like, well, I'm guessing, Miss Megan, did you love the episode when Brian McKnight came out the bushes and just started singing when Martin proposed to Gina? Okay, yeah. Oh, I can see that.
For you, girl, I gotta do my thing. Keep them closed. There will never come a day you'll ever hear me say that I want and need to be without you. I wanna give my all. Baby, just hold me. Simply control me.
I did.
Word. That's what's up. That's what's up. What's one thing that you do miss the most about the 843? I gotta ask you.
I miss everything. You know, I'm not even gonna front.
Yeah.
You know, I was excited to spread my wings and move on. I think that because of the way the pandemic has affected my work life and even personal life, it has made it harder to adjust here than I ever thought it would. Mm-hmm. But I miss it all. I miss the food. I miss the people. I miss.
Yes.
I miss my life there. I miss my friends who were there. And so I miss it all. I mean, I had a good life in Charleston. I have no complaints with the experience that I had living in Charleston. So I miss it. I miss it in totality. Not to say that I don't enjoy anything about what's going on in my life now, but I definitely appreciate even so much more now being away from Charleston. I appreciate Charleston. The people there were so good to me. The story telling opportunities there are unlike any other. The community was so accessible, and they were so accessible, willing and allowing to let me and allowed me to tell their stories. And so I don't take that lightly.
Yeah.
And I think that we were able to tell some really good stories my time working in Charleston. So I miss it all, baby. I miss Nana's Seafood. I used to go there like every Friday. They knew my order by Brittany, like, Brittany, this is Megan. She like, you on the way? And I would like order sometimes food for like just me and my girlfriends would go sit down and eat, or I would get like huge trays and take them back to my sister's house. My sister lived in on James Island for a while.
Okay.
When I was in Austin. So I miss it, y'all. I miss it.
You just brought me back to home with so much too, because I'm living in Kentucky now and I've been up here about 10 years. I miss home like every day. I brag about it so much and people always wonder why. You just was like the best ambassador for it right there. If y'all don't know who I'm talking to, I'm talking to Miss Megan. She is the Do-Rag Ministry leader. And if you don't know about the Do-Rag Ministry, I think I'm going to have you ask. I mean, I got to ask you, just so they can know, what is the Do-Rag Ministry, Miss Megan?
So the Do-Rag Ministry starts because I like to talk to myself, right? So I feel like when we got these phones and we're on our Insta stories and we're talking, you know, I'm just talking to myself.
Yeah.
People listen, and I'm really fascinated that people pay attention to the foolishness that I say, right? So when I started the Do-Rag Ministry, what happened was I always got dressed and did my makeup at work. And so I'm a little different than some women. When my hair is done, I don't tie it up. When it's not done is when I tie it up. So if I have a do-rag on, that means my hair is not done and I'm trying to get it together. So I was in my homegirl, Tahira, who works at the station, who works at ABC News 4 with me when I worked there. She's still there. I walked in the edit bay one morning and we were talking, and I think I just said do-rag ministry and it just kind of stuck, you know?
It becomes
a thing, you know? So I like to wear my do-rag and play something inspirational in the morning. And so I would play a good gospel song to, you know, motivate me. And I realized in doing that I listen to a lot of going through it gospel music more so than moving
uplifting
through it.
Yeah.
So you know, sometimes we'd be in there and we'd be singing a song, you know, singing along with the song and realizing then, I, like, literally after that, she and I would have a praise moment with ourselves, the two of us. Hey. And then I'd go get on set to do, you know, the morning news or whatever I was doing that morning. So it was just something that I said one day and it just kind of stuck. And I think that, you know, as I grow as a journalist, as a person, as a woman, being my authentic self is what works best for me. You know, people, you know, obsess over followings. I don't obsess over having the largest following. For me, it's having a following who engages with me for just being me. Right. And so I am a person who wears a durag and a woman who wears a durag. And I, you know, sometimes I have the flap hanging, sometimes, you know, yeah, I just think that people seeing who I truly am and not realizing that I'm not putting on a facade at all, it works, you know?
You know what helps out? Just a little guy like me, I gotta say, because when I do these interviews, usually on Sundays, I always tell people, like, I love talking to the person themselves. Because it doesn't matter if you have a blue check, it doesn't matter if you have a K after the following, it matters who you really are. And some people get caught up on it, like you just said, they really get caught up on that kind of stuff. And it's kind of weird, but it's the time we're living in. But I like the fact that you can maneuver through this lifestyle, honestly, and I'm not disrespecting you because it's the truth. You know how you look. People know how people look. And it's like, you don't let that carry who you are. You don't let that, you know what I'm saying, get to your head. People are just so obsessed with that stuff. So, Miss Megan, you really are inspiration to me as just being a guy. And I'm not even, like, fronting just because, like, with the stuff that you've been going through and what I looked up, it's like, okay, she's been about this. And when I even, like, talked to you, we had the first and only conversation in public. It was at the Coliseum, like I said, the day before the bridge run.
I remember.
You was like, yeah, you was just like, oh, yeah, come on. Let's take a picture. I was like, oh, she cool as hell. Yeah, and I was not going to lie to you. I was a little drunk because they was giving out free samples. I'm like, I didn't want to be like, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to be like this. But, yeah, she's super nice, man, and this is what matters. So the human being is definitely way better than the facade. So, Miss Megan, let me help you. Let me ask you this question because I did write it down, and it's just been something that I think everyone needs to – because everyone goes through it, I'll say that. What are, like, some essentials that you have to be the best you every day?
Ooh, to be the best me every day. I'm really family oriented, so I have to talk to a member of my immediate family daily. It's usually my sister. I probably talk to her about 17 times a day. And so I need my family first and foremost. And because with my... if I'm being honest, I'm a Christian. I'm getting down with, you know, God and Jesus and all that. Yeah. But I struggle sometimes with praying, and my mama and my daddy, they don't. And so I need to connect with somebody who I know has my well-being and my best interests at heart at all times. And for me, that's a member of my family, my immediate family. And so I need that. I need sleep. Oh, jeez.
Can never get enough of that, man.
My first alarm goes off at 1:45 in the morning. And Lord. So I need sleep. And I need sleep to function. I need sleep to look my best. I need sleep to be my best. And, we live in a hustle mentality society right now. And I'm not knocking anybody who's out there grinding. That mm-hmm. ain't for me. Okay, as for me and mine, we gonna get some sleep. So sleeping is for me. Like people say, you know, oh, I'm up when you sleep. I'm sleep. Like I don't brag about my hours or my lack of sleep or being tired, because I'm not my best self when I'm sleepy. And then lastly, what I need to be my best self, and this isn't something I would say that I actually practice on a consistent basis, but as I've gotten older, this is something that I've realized that I need it, is to take care of my body with what I put in it and how I treat it. And so food, I love to eat. I love to cook. I take that back. I like to cook when I want to cook. I don't like to cook when people ask me to cook, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So if I get in the mood and I feel like cooking, then I'm gonna cook. And if I don't wanna cook, then I'm gonna eat. Like I've been eating spaghetti since Sunday. And I'm going to eat spaghetti again tonight.
You cannot go wrong with spaghetti. It's my favorite. Oh, my goodness. Tell them again.
Yeah, I made a big old thing of spaghetti because it's mine. And I can eat my leftovers as many days as I want. And I cooked it. And I know it's in grains. But I have been making breakfast. So I make fresh breakfast every day. But spaghetti is what we're having for dinner. And it's been what we've been having for dinner since Sunday. And I am not ashamed. It tastes better the longer that it sits, in my opinion.
My grandma did not lie. She's telling the truth. Telling the truth, y'all.
So I need good food in my body, healthy food in my body, and then I also need exercise. So those two things go hand in hand, is taking care of my body in that way, to make sure that I'm feeding it something nutritious, and then also that I exercise and that I get my heart rate going a few times a week as well.
Yes, ma'am. I know that's right. And then, Miss Megan, you are a part-time actress in a sense. Are you not? I mean, AKA Tina Turner, I think I saw that, if I'm not mistaken. She can make Broadway, y'all.
Yo, so the Tina Turner thing, I did that. Oh, 2020, guys. I keep saying, I want to say last year because, you know, 2020 was what it was. But yes, that was in 2019 in Charleston. And I'm not an actress. I'm not a dancer. I'm not a singer performer at all. That was completely out of my comfort zone. So I can't dance. I have no rhythm at all.
Stop.
And none. Don't ask me. Physical movement in public embarrasses me. Sis don't have no rhythm. And so when I got asked to do that, to raise money for the American Lung Association, it was a fundraiser. That was the ultimate goal.
Okay.
And I did my best to try to raise as much money as I could. I fell a little short of my goal. And so I knew I was going to fall short of my goal, closer to it. So the least I could do was put on a good show. Yes, and so sure. I was like, what could I give these people? And I was the only African-American to participate in it. And I think that year I was the only woman. I think I was up against all men. And so I was like, well, I'm going to do Tina Turner, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember I did this little promo video, and, you know, the station ended up making me take it down because they were afraid we were going to get sued. Because, like, I really, Toni Braxton and Bobby Brown were going to look at my IG and sue me. But anyways, but I did this little promo video with, and I was pretending to be, I did a reenactment of a Toni Braxton song and a Bobby Brown song. So I was trying to throw people off on who I was going to be, because naturally you would think I would be, you know, a good Toni Braxton, you know, brown skin, short hair.
Right,
and
right.
I dressed up as Toni Braxton for Halloween that year, or the year before, or that year, whatever year it was. I had dressed up as Toni Braxton that year. And so when I did Tina, it was really shocking to everyone. And I took dance lessons faithfully. So I took dance lessons for about 2 months to learn the routine. And, you know, that night was, even though it wasn't about me at all, because it was about raising money for the American Lung Association, which is a really good organization. Yeah. It also was one of the best nights ever, because I stepped outside of myself and outside of my comfort zone to do something that I never thought I would be able to do. My heart was racing the entire time.
Wow. Hey, that's amazing. That's amazing. Once you get out that comfort zone, you just never know how amazing you can actually be.
Yeah, so the shot of Patron before we went on stage really helped. That really helped.
I know that's right.
Yeah.
Man, Miss Megan, I'm not going to keep you that much longer. I'm going to finish up these last little points, and I'm going to close it up. I just got to ask you, what was the ultimate story that, like, really took your, like, it really took you for a moment to even be like, wow, I can't believe I just covered that, like, Do you have an actual story that you could literally never forget that you covered yourself?
I have a few, actually.
Okay.
One of them is with a young man from North Charleston. His name is Shaquille. And so North Charleston has, like, this sweet spot in my heart, because I feel like it gets an unfair rap.
It do.
And it's not fair. And it's filled with people who look like me. And Charleston as a whole has a special place. Charleston County, you know, the low country has a special place in my heart, but North Charleston in particular. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people would talk about the crime in the area. They would talk about how, you know, these people aren't, you know, trying to do better for themselves and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you guys don't even understand the people who live here.
Yep.
And so as a storyteller, I found it an opportunity to tell a story to hopefully help people understand some of the people who come from North Charleston. So Shaquille had a very unique story, well, unique story to me, but maybe not unique to other Native Charlestonians who looked like him. But I wanted the others who didn't look like him or who didn't understand that people like him existed to understand. So I'm gonna tell you his, briefly, I'll try to keep it short, his story. Mm-hmm. He had never left Charleston County until he was 18 years old.
Wow.
Never left Charleston County. He didn't know life outside of his neighborhood. He didn't and it wasn't any fault of his own. It was the circumstances in which he was born into, right? And so he talked about how, you know, people had broken into it in his house and like knocked his like grandmother over the head with a pistol.
Wow.
Shot his cousin in the house. People had gone to jail. His mom worked, you know, 2 and 3 jobs all the time. So he was, you know, living between his mom and his grandmother's house. Mm-hmm. And the first time that he ever left Charleston County, he went to Orangeburg.
Wow, he went up the street.
Right. And so now I'm so proud of him. He's in grad school in Boston. He went to Clapham University, my alma mater as well.
Okay.
Graduated from there. And he is in grad school now in Boston. He's doing exceptionally well. But I wanted people to understand that you're holding people to a standard that they don't even know exist. And imagine if you lived in an area that didn't have the basic necessities to, you know, to live well.
Yep.
and you want them to thrive.
Yep.
You're withholding quality education, you're withholding quality food, you're withholding access to transportation, and you're expecting so much from people. And I just really thought it was unfair to hold people to the standard that they don't even know exist. And so that's one story. Another story is one day I got sent to a shooting scene, and it was off of Dorchester Road. And when we got there, the entire neighborhood, it was like in the middle of the day, so it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And the entire neighborhood was outside, and the tension was so thick. And I really thought something might've broke out during—
Right there.
Right there, yeah.
Yeah.
Even though, you know, all of, you know, North Charleston was out there. The body was still on the scene when we— Wow. —got there. The coroner had just arrived, and it was like people were crying and screaming and stuff. And I remember a few things about that moment is that, one, as nervous as I was, the community was so kind to me. They let me through the area. They told me where to go. They weren't saying get out of the neighborhood or anything like that.
Yeah.
And then the second thing was that there was a barbershop right across the street from where the body was.
Okay.
And so the whole barbershop was sitting outside watching. And— Wow. —so when the scene kind of, you know, cleared out some, they were still sitting outside. And I went over and I was like, hey, and I introduced myself. And I said, you know, I want to tell the story of this neighborhood. I said, I can tell the story of another young man who was killed in North Charleston, or I can tell the root cause of the problem in this neighborhood.
Yeah.
And if we want to label it as a problem. And, you know, they grilled me. I ain't gonna lie. I ain't gonna front. Now they grilled me, like, you know, like, well, what you gonna— Yeah. —do, blah, blah, blah. And then—
Yeah.
—they calmed down. They toned it down. And Antonio Rivers, I'll never forget him. One, because he has my last name.
Okay.
We're not related. But he was one of the nicest people I've ever met. And I think about him often just because he's such a good person. And I saw him shortly, right before I left Charleston at an event. And what he told me in that story, it resonates with me. Every time I go to a scene, a shooting scene, I think about him, because it's easy to tell a story about, you know, another person was killed today. But he talked to me about how the transition of the neighborhood over the years, that's his home, that's where he's from, that's where he lives, that's where he works, that's where his shop is. And he just talked about it in a different way. So while we told the story of the young man who was killed, we also told the story of a neighborhood who's dealing with a serious emotional issue.
Exactly.
And that's the story. That's journalism— Yeah. —at its, in my opinion, at its finest, you know, is when you can tell that story and you're not focusing on just, you know, a person was shot. We're still looking for who shot him.
Yes.
Anybody called Crime Stoppers? Anybody know anything called Crime Stoppers?
Yes. I was knowing that the Crime Stoppers number since Live 5 News put it on after like every episode of Price is Right. Like, oh my goodness, like they just made that a program. I really do appreciate the fact that we have, and I'm gonna call it for what it is, we have more Black people doing journalism. Like, that stuff is so underrated because they always get a one-sided story. Like, Miss Megan, I'm gonna be honest with you, and I've been calling you Miss Megan just because I know you're not that older than me, but it's out of respect. But it's honestly like, you do carry a whole lot of, you know what I'm saying, weight on your shoulders, and it's not all on, like, you didn't want this, but you do represent a lot of people, and it's like, you represent us in the right way. People always want to say, oh my goodness, she's just getting the pass. And no, you came up, you done gave, literally, you answered all my questions in that whole rant, to be honest with you. You came, you went to college, you did everything that you need to do to get to where you need to go. And it's just like, that's honestly what you got to do. You just got to keep forward and looking forward to these dreams and not think about this one-sided life, because they have been just instilling that on us forever. And I love the fact that now we have the power to show the next generation what is really going on. So,
I'm gonna add to that right quick, because it's in the spirit of being honest and transparent.
Yeah.
I remember early on in college, I just wanted to be famous, right? I wanted people to know my name.
And I'll
never forget the moment that it clicked, that, because there's a level of vanity for everyone who works in television, right? You know, you want to be seen, you want to look nice, blah, blah,
yes,
blah.
Ma'am.
There's a level of vanity in it. But the moment every journalist realizes their power, and that what you do is so much bigger than you, you know? It's for me, I come from a small town. Like, I was born in Michigan, but I grew up in South Carolina. And in Paxville, if I'm being honest, I grew up in Paxville, South Carolina.
Wow.
It has two gas stations, a Family Dollar, and one stoplight. And I need the little brown girls and boys who are from my area and areas like mine to understand that it doesn't matter where you come from. You can accomplish whatever you work hard towards. I have been extremely blessed with people who have given me opportunity after opportunity that I didn't deserve. Even when I was difficult to work with, even when I've been hard to work with, they still thought enough of me to pour into me, to not give up on me. And so because of that, I owe them a great debt, and I can't give up. I can't fail. I can't be mediocre, because they've done so much. You know what I mean? Yes, I didn't grow up, the area that I grew up in, I didn't grow up not seeing Black people being successful, right? I was in the third grade when we moved to South Carolina. My teacher was Black. And when I was in the fifth grade, my principal was Black, and my superintendent was Black. In middle school, my principal was Black. So I always saw us doing well. So failure was never an option. Growing up was an option. So
go ahead.
I had to mature. And so as you know, life is my daddy always says, keep living, baby. And I did. And I keep on living, and I'm still living, and I'm still growing, and I'm still learning. And I understand that while, you know, I would love to be, you know, famous, so to speak, or whatever, right now the focus is making sure that I amplify the voice, those who feel like they're voiceless, to be a voice for those who feel like no one is telling their story and no one is listening to them. And in this community and in the DMV area, it's been harder to do because of the pandemic, to find, you know, my way like I did in Charleston. The world was open, as I was, you know, able to find my way a lot easier. I had to give a shout out to Representative Wendell Gilliard. He was one of the first people who really plugged me into some good stories. The last story that I remember, and I'll stop talking, that really stuck out to me was that there was a neighborhood in Charleston, and it's home to the oldest street, and some of the names are escaping me right now, but Representative Wendell Gilliard put me onto that story. These people have been living in this mobile home park for 40 years, right? Wow. And they were being forced out and had nowhere to go because they didn't own the land. Somebody else owned the land, and they sold it to developers, and the developers were building new homes on there. They weren't building affordable homes at all. They were building, you know, Charleston, they were building, you know, new homes or whatever.
Gentrification.
And because they were building, the land was zoned, say the land was zoned for 20 houses, right?
Yes.
They, and if they built 20 houses, then so many of those had to be affordable housing. but they were purposely building below the zone, so they didn't have to include any affordable housing. So not only were those people displaced, but everybody, all those families who lived around there, their property taxes were going to start going up because the value in the area was going to go up. And so I remember staying, breaking that story and staying on the city with helping these people find some place to go. I met one of the people, I remember the gentleman, he told me he had just redone the inside of his trailer. And he had spent all his money, you know, a year or so before that redoing his trailer. And now the trailer, you know, trailers after they sit for a while, you can't move them. He couldn't move that, you know, trailer. And he had spent all his money and he was like, what am I supposed to do now? And so staying on top of the city, you know, to make sure that they found some place for those people to go and set up home, set up shop and have a home was really important to me. And so those are some of the stories that I will forever remember and relationships that I will forever cherish having been able to build living in Charleston.
Miss Megan, the fact that that answer really answered a lot of questions, it really is like inspiring to me because you don't even know the philanthropy that journalism could really lead up to. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you just went out, basically helped these people find a house after the city did them wrong. Like, and what if you weren't there to help that, like, to basically cover that?
So the thing is, they weren't necessarily intentionally being done wrong, you know?
I know. Because
technically, by definition, or this word has so many definitions, gentrification, is the sale of property from black to white. And it was actually a white man who owned the land. It was just so happened that a lot of black people lived on it. And there were some white people who lived on it as well. And they were selling it to another white person. Wow. And so it by definition, it wasn't gentrification, but the effects of it around was going to be gentrifying that neighborhood.
Yes, ma'am.
And it was prime real estate. The road that it was on is home to the oldest street in the state of South Carolina. Dang. And so it's such a historical area and is going to be, and it has changed since that time.
Yeah. That's it. So what do you think? I mean, because you answered it a little bit earlier, and I know this is like one thing I want to hit because you are in that area, you saw it the most. The domestic terrorism that we are seeing in just like the last 10 years, it's become trendy now. We seen like more terrorism in 10 years from our homeland than we seen from other countries. In your opinion, what do you honestly think can prevent this, if anything? Do you think anything can help us like make us more safe? Because sometimes we're just like, I don't know what's going on now.
I think it starts with each individual is within. You know, they have to make a decision to want to see things from a different perspective, you know? And there are some people who are committed to their beliefs and their thought processes, and they're not interested in opening up their minds and hearts. And some people believe they're superior than others simply by the way that they look, by their tax bracket. And for those people, it's really hard to change. I remember one time I was in Charleston and I was getting ready to do a live shot and the secessionist party showed up behind me. And James Bessinger was out there with his big old Confederate flag. And I think he thought he was gonna scare me, and it didn't. I went and stuck the camera in his face and stuck the microphone in his face and said, why are you here? What do you have to say? Talk to me.
You gotta talk to him like that.
Because one, you're not gonna scare me. Racists do not scare me.
Facts.
Unpredictable black people with guns sometimes, yes. But racists, no, they don't scare me. And that's because I know I'm protected. I know who I belong to, so I'm not worried about a racist in that way. And I don't understand hate because I don't have it in my heart. That's so true. I'll never understand people who wake up hating people, you know? It just doesn't make sense to me.
It don't. It's a waste of life.
Right. And so I don't know what we can do but to, you know, just show them constantly in our day-to-day actions of who we are, and we're not going anywhere. So one of my mottos in life is just do you. The world will adjust. And that's what we got to keep doing. We got to keep doing us, because everything that everyone loves is influenced by us.
Facts. I mean, I'm just going to keep it a buck. That's 100% true. And I tell this joke all the time. You don't know how many car accidents this world would really have if it wasn't for black people. The main reason a black dude made the dang on traffic light. Like, I mean, yeah, it's a terrible dad joke, but I just became a dad again, so I'm qualified to start saying these dad jokes. You know, so yeah, like, honestly, if you think about it, it's the truth. Like, to wrap it up, though, Ms. Megan, because you did give me probably one of the best silver views. I like to call these a silver view because I'm interviewing someone, and it's a pun to my name. But wrapping it up, what has been the best life lesson for you to where you can, like, just say, here's some knowledge for you, my guy? Like, what's the best, like, life lesson that's basically got you to life where you at today?
The best life lesson is an ongoing lesson, and I kind of touched on it earlier, is that what you do is not about you. And your gifts, whatever they are, and whoever you are, and whatever you're good at, whatever is your niche, it is intended to share. You are supposed to share that with the world. All the time, I got people who say all the time, I should do this, I should charge for this, I should charge for that. I try to share as much as I can for free. And the reason being is because everything that I've learned, nobody charged me for it. I'd be doggone if I would pay for it anyway. But I believe that you're supposed to share your gifts. And if you can share them for free, then share them for free. You know, put people on. You know, people always say when you get to the top, send the ladder back down. I believe to pull as you climb. And so, like, there we can get up together, you know? Yeah. I don't look at any situation or any person as an anchor to me, as, like, holding me down in a way that I can't still keep climbing. Now, sometimes you do have to, you know, cut dead weight, right? I cut dead weight all the time. But at the same time, I also realize that, you know, my gifts and the platforms that I have and the voice that I have is made to be shared. And it's just not about me. It's so easy to be self-serving. You know, we're in such a vain society. And it's no fault of our own. It's just the way the world has, you know, shaped out to be. And so it's easy to get caught up in, you know, me. But it's just not about me. It's not about me at all. And the moment that I realized that and it really kind of stuck up here, everything started to improve professionally for me.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. I'm actually going to definitely take that token. Thank you so much for this time. If anyone who don't know you, which is very few, just going to let them know where they can
everybody
find
don't
you.
Out.
I got to do this for the show. This is going to be on YouTube sometime today or later. So I got to, like I said, I'm trying to make it going like professional. I'm really trying to get to where you at, Ms. Megan. Thank you really for letting everybody know where they can find you at and follow you.
Okay. On Instagram, it is Megan the Woman. Fun fact.
Go ahead.
I get tagged in Megan Thee Stallion stuff all the time.
I see that. No lie. I did see that one time.
Yeah, I get tagged at least 3 times a week. I'm tagged with something that's intended for Megan Thee Stallion.
Hold on, real quick though. Did you come up with the Megan Thee first or did she come up with it first?
No,
go ahead, give me the exclusives.
That's been my name on Instagram. It's been my name on Instagram.
See, Megan, you gotta go talk to her.
No, she's good. I love sharing a name with her, right? You know,
she's so.
Anyway, I get tagged in her stuff all the time. But yeah, on Instagram, Megan the Woman. On Facebook, it's Megan Rivers. And on Twitter, it's Meg M. Rivers. I hate being called Meg. Megan was taken, so I had to go with Meg M. Rivers. I think sometimes people call me Meg, feeling like they know me better. And like that makes us closer when they call me Meg. Fun fact, really, really hate being called Meg. It sounds like, you know, Shorty from Family Guy.
Family Guy, I was just about to say, you definitely made Megan way more cool because Meg was definitely not the goal in the early 2000s.
Yeah, she wasn't cool, so you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And Instagram is really my jam because I get to talk and be myself and show you in my durag, show you cooking, show you when I'm working out, whatever the case may be, or go completely silent and don't show you anything.
Ms. Megan, thank you so much. I really do appreciate this time. Thank you for shining your light, giving me the opportunity to talk to an Emmy-nominated journalist and just an all-around good person. This was another episode of Silver Rise. You stay safe out there, stay Rona-free, and stay dope, okay?
All right, you take care. Thank you so much for having me.